It is hard to believe that it's been 50 years since the Stonewall Riots, and a lot has changed from June 1969 to Pride Month. Now, welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. There are very few who can say they grew up in the village. I just happen to be one of them. And so when I say a lot has changed from then to now, it's with a certain perspective. But what still needs to be changed, and how close are we to achieving true equality? We'll have a number of guests give us their thoughts as to what's going on today, their concerns, their hopes for the future. But we're going to start with a look back. How far back? Well, the good old days of 1990. Joe Graybars was a state rep from Bridgeport. He made a whole bunch of headlines back then because he said, well, Joe Graybars, what did you say?
I said, I am a gay man.
Joe, how are you? Welcome to the full story.
Hey. Hi, Ron. I enjoy saying that over and over again, I have to tell you.
How have you been?
I've been just great. Thanks, Ron.
That's fantastic.
Congratulations for doing the show.
Thank you.
It's a sign itself of how far we've come, right?
We're trying to get words out there, right? And try to get good words out there. Joe, what was the big deal back then? I mean, why was this so newsworthy?
Well, so one of the criticisms in the gay community, of the gay community from outside of the community amongst other activists, was that gay people didn't come out if there was something real at stake. People might forget, but in 1990, we were living through an era of Jesse Helms. A Ku Klux Klansman was running for governor and then Senate of Louisiana. We were in an atmosphere, perhaps some would compare to the one we're heading into in these times, of increased violence, increased racism, increased homophobia, a fear in society generally of the direction that things were going. And we know historically those are the times that people who are represented in minority groups get targeted in particular. And so I was very concerned about the growing political debate generally, but also the fact that two of the most prominent openly gay people in the United States were U.S. Representative Jerry Studs and U.S. Representative Jerry Frank, and both of them had been outed. And so I thought that this was the right moment to step out, to speak, and to say something a little bit different to change the conversation, and I think it did.
I think you said Jerry Frank. I believe you meant Barney Frank.
Barney Frank, yes. Jerry Studs and Barney Frank.
but can you believe how back then that you actually made the national news because of this?
Well, it was interesting, and people might remember this. Ronald Reagan's budget director was a man named Stockman, and he happened to resign that day. And some of the national news outlets carried that story as the first story of the evening news and the front page headline, and some actually carried my news conference as the front page news. So it was heard from all over the world. I receive responses, and still to this day still receive responses from places as far away as Australia and as close as right down the street from my neighbors. So the coverage that this had must have been a really slow news day, I guess.
Now, Joe, in the past, you said you regretted not telling more of your friends and your family beforehand. That way they could stand with you at the press conference. It's difficult, isn't it, being a pioneer?
Well, so that was a difficult decision, and I think if I were doing it again today, I might do it a little bit different. But one of the criticisms that I was trying to avoid was the criticism of people, particularly in elected office, being forced out. And so I didn't want anything being leaked ahead of time by anyone, and you know how porous the political rumor mill can be, because I wanted my statement to be my statement, and I wanted it to be the first statement. I didn't want it to be viewed like the information was out there and I was being forced out without my complete cooperation. And so that was one of the reasons I did it. In retrospect, I think I should have prepared the people closest to me a little bit better, and I think that I would do that part a little bit different if I did today.
Mm. Lenny Grimaldi, who you know, he has a new book out. It's a compilation of a lot of the articles that he's written over the years. He was on our program the other week. And in it, he has a reprint of an interview that he did with you back in 91. And in it, you say, and I want to quote this, "I want society, particularly people in Connecticut, to understand more what it is to be gay." Now, that interview was in 1991. Here we are close to 30 years later. Has your wish been granted?
Yes. mostly. I mean, even in the most remote parts of the world today, they're having a conversation about what it means to be gay. As a matter of fact, just this week, two countries, Botswana in Africa and Ecuador in South America, had major conversations about what it meant to be gay, and both decriminalized it and legalized it. So I think the conversation has moved way far behind ahead of where we were back then. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I came out back then was because during the prior legislative session, a colleague of mine in the legislature stood up and said on the floor in debate, "I don't know any gay people, do you?" And
surprise.
I don't think he was really unique, right? I think that may have even been the more common view, even though, of course, everybody knew gay people. But I don't think that there's anybody who can say that today, certainly.
Mm. Now, after you left office, you became head of the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union for a while, and you're now a lobbyist for Gallo and Robinson. You ever regret not staying in office?
No, I think there are different kinds of activism. I feel blessed that I've been able to participate in the advancement of some very important causes, not just gay and lesbian civil rights, but women's reproductive rights, gun anti-violence, the advancement of culture issues in the state, and those were very important to me. I got a chance to be in Washington, D.C., to lobby the U.S. Congress, to work on national health care reform, to work with the First Lady, and to meet with U.S. senators on an important issue for years. I have been the most fortunate person in the world in that I get to go to work, and have for my entire life, really, every single day, and talk about the things that mean the most to me, and who could ask for a better job than that?
It's nice to hear. When you celebrate Pride Month now, do you think the younger generation has an appreciation for the struggles that went on in the past?
Well, I think we're like just about any other minority group, that your history gets marginalized, and certainly the gay and lesbian community's history has been buried time and time again throughout the ebbs and flows of human history. And I think that we see that in a lot of other communities. You know, older feminists, I hear, complain that younger feminists don't understand where the history that's behind their movement, and certainly the same thing with the African-American and the Latinx communities. They feel the same thing, that it's hard to find their history. Young people don't identify as much with it. Time moves on. I think that's a part of being human. I hope that certainly in a place like Connecticut, that, you know, the history of the gay and lesbian movement and of activism and the things that we've cared about over the long length and breadth of U.S. history, at least, get included by teachers and educators in the courses that they teach.
Joe, what's the number one issue facing the LGBTQ community?
So I think that the services provided to LGBT people, including people with HIV/AIDS, have been segregated because over recent history, we've had to create our own because of a lack of attention in the mainstream service-providing community, including the business community, including medical services, including human services, including cultural and educational services. And I think that one of the most exciting avenues of advocacy available to us going forward is going to be to integrate gay and lesbian health, gay and lesbian social services, gay and lesbian businesses, gay and lesbian whatever, back into the mainstream of services, and make sure that the uniqueness that it's necessary to identify, for example, gay and lesbian health, get treated within the larger and broader community. And so I think developing and strengthening the organizations that the community has created, and then creating pathways and networks for them to work more effectively and more productively with the broader, for example, business community, I think it's going to be necessary going forward. I think it's really exciting. For example, you know, why are gay youth suicides a larger proportion of youth suicide across the country, and how can we identify and do that, and how can we get everyone working in the area of identifying youth services to find out and to work with the speciality of how that affects gay youth. Gay senior citizens, you know, we've seen, since gay people have been out, we now see in some smaller rural communities or sometimes even urban communities that gay seniors get isolated, and they get isolated in a very specific way. But there's a problem of elder isolation generally. And so how do we work in the special problems of gay seniors and their isolation into how we address elderly isolation overall? And so I think that's the exciting part of things going forward.
Joe, you sound happy. You sound positive. I'm glad things turned out well.
I am so glad we live in Connecticut. I can't tell you. I mean, think of the things going on now in Florida or Georgia where or Texas, where elected officials are openly calling for gay people to be killed or murdered, Alabama. We, you know, sometimes don't appreciate all of the advantages that Connecticut has. This is definitely one of them, that you can live here with your family members, and if they're gay and lesbian, they can feel a part of the same society in the way that you do, where in other places of this country and this world they can't. And I'm so fortunate that we exist in this time and in this place.
Joe Graybars. Joe, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Oh, very exciting. Thank you again, Ron. Thank you very much.
Be well. Take care. This is The Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Great music. It's The Full Story on WSHU. Today we're talking about Pride Month and getting a number of different perspectives. We have three guests for you this segment. David Kilmick, president and CEO of the LGBT Network on Long Island. David has been with us before, and David, it's great to have you back. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having us back.
Leo Preziosi Jr. is founder and executive director of Live Out Loud. Hi, Leo.
Hey, Ron, how are you?
And
hello, David.
I'm fantastic, thank you. And let's bring in our other guest, Stevie Price, last year's host of the Long Island Pride Parade. And Stevie, I believe you're hosting, is it the Saturday portion of Pride on the Beach this year? Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. I'm hosting the Twilight Beach Party next Saturday.
Beautiful. Welcome, Stevie. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
David, your organization has the largest suburban LGBT center in the nation. Where is it? What do you do there?
Sure. We just officially opened it up last week. It is located in Hopog, right off the Long Island Expressway, right off exit 55. It's over a 15,000 square foot state-of-the-art tech-forward facility that has a cafe. It has meeting and conference facilities and event facilities that could host up to 500 altogether. We house over 55 full-time staff here, doing many different important programs for the community, everything from youth, adult, senior programs to HIV prevention and HIV and STI testing, education, anti-bullying. You know, there are so many different things that are that are happening here. And in our grand opening week, we had over 1,000 people that that came through our doors. And it's bustling. It's bustling with a bigger center, a modern center that has all the amenities and all the technology. People are coming. People are using the center. Other organizations, other businesses are looking to use it as well. And it's become a true community center, not only for the LGBT community, but just for the Long Island region as well.
Yeah, it sounds impressive. David, we had a program that we did. It was about affordable housing in our region. We did it a few weeks back. But you have broken ground on the first LGBT affordable senior housing complex. I believe it's in Bayshore.
Yes.
Tell us about
that,
it.
Sure. We did that 3 days ago. Or 2 days ago. I don't know. There's so much going on. I don't know how many days ago it was. But it was this week. And it's going to be the first affordable LGBT-friendly senior housing complex in the suburbs in the nation. And it's at the site of our former community center. in Bayshore, a block north of Main Street, right on Park Avenue. And it's going to be 75 units of 100% affordable, LGBT-friendly senior housing. I mean, all brand-new apartments with affordable rents. And when we say affordable, you know, a lot of times when we hear affordable housing, it's hardly affordable. You know, it's still very pricey. This is truly going to reflect 30 to 80% of the area median income, and we're expecting rents on one bedroom to be about $1,100 and rents on two bedrooms to be about $1,600. It's also going to be anchored by another LGBT network, Next Generation Community Center, an 8,000 square foot center that will occupy the first floor to provide services not only to the residents but to the rest of the community as well, with a strong focus in on senior and elder services. But since Bayshore was our original home, the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of the other community and civic groups really want us to still provide youth services there, and we're certainly going to.
Fantastic. Stevie, I'm going to get to you in just one second. I just want to ask Leo if he could tell us about Live Out Loud.
Yeah. You know, we're just celebrating our 18th year anniversary this year. And what's important for us is to bring our programs on school grounds and just connect with the students in their gender sexuality clubs, and really bringing lesson plans, whether it's covering historical figures or different issues and challenges that are facing the community today. Really just forming community. You know, we want to connect this younger generation with so many different resources and opportunities and role models. So we're just in the schools. We're having conversations. We're connecting them to great people in our community. We're also bringing them to different companies like Google and the New York Times and NBC, our partners, to really get to meet people who are out at work, living their authentic lives, and really just, you know, on the journey. And it's so important for us to show them the breadth of what's out there, because we really want to show them what awaits them. You know, and there's so many great opportunities. And as I think we all know, that high school is a very, very small world. So we just want to broaden their vision of what the LGBT community is, the rich history, and what awaits them, what opportunities await them.
Leo, where are you based out of?
We are in New York City, and we have our programs in the five boroughs. But we do have one national program. We have Live Out Loud's Homecoming Project, where we invite members of the LGBT community to go back to their hometown high school. And we've sent about 180 people back to 26 states around the country. And that's been very, very exciting for us. And I think not only for the students, but also for the people that go back. Because they really get to look at, you know, their high school years, and they really have an opportunity to, you know, put them in a new perspective, so that those memories, and some, you know, a lot of us have very, very difficult memories from high school, but we can let those memories, we can let go of them. They won't, you know, and hopefully they won't have a hold on us anymore. So it's really benefiting two communities, the younger generation and also the older generation. And I always hear from the people who speak at our schools around the country that they benefit from speaking at the, you know, their hometown high schools as much as the students. So it's really an exciting opportunity for all generations.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right. Some people never would want to look back at high school, and others say they had a fabulous time. You never know, right?
Ooh. Yeah, it's tough, yeah.
Stevie, welcome. Tell us about Pride on the Beach.
So Pride on the Beach, it's actually the second time that I'm going to be hosting it. And what's going on next Saturday, it's going to be June 22nd. There's going to be a party. We're going to have a DJ, live performances. There's also going to be a swimsuit fashion show going on as well, provided by TYR Sport. And the woman who's putting on the fashion show, Colette Lee Morales from NY Fit Fest, she is great to work with. And just being on stage and just being around so much love and positivity and just spreading pride the way that it's supposed to be, just bringing everyone together. I really can't think of a greater experience. It's amazing.
Now, this is at Long Beach, right?
Yes.
Okay. How many people show up?
Oof, gosh. I think last year we had easily thousands of people. I don't even know if I could even put a number on it. I'm going to say at least 20,000, maybe it seemed. At least it seemed that way.
Wow.
There was a very large
Pride
turnout.
Weekend. Yeah. It's, I'm sorry to butt in, Steve.
No,
that's
come
okay,
on.
No.
And hey, if you want to host Sunday too, we can have you. yeah, there's about 20,000 or 30,000 people that come out for the weekend in Long Beach. And as Stevie said, Saturday is the Twilight Beach Party. We also have the second annual Long Island Pet Pride Parade and Animal Adoption Event with close to 200 people have registered their pets already. And we have Sparky the Dragon, the Islanders mascot. That's going to be our grand marshal for that. But but then that Sunday, the 23rd, is the 29th annual Long Island Pride Parade. And it's real important for people to come out and march. And if not marching, then to cheer on those that are marching from, from different organizations, from Gay Straight Alliance and Gender Sexuality Alliance clubs. We have about 20 GSAs marching to local synagogues and churches, to the Nassau County Police Department and Suffolk County Police Department. It's really a true expression of community and unity. And that's on the 23rd in Long Beach. And then following that is a big concert on the beach with Macy Gray headlining an incredible lineup.
It's I've enjoyed the conversation. It's been a lot of fun, but I'm just going to get a little bit more serious now. And David, I'll start with you, but I'd like to get all your thoughts. A lot has changed in the last 50 years, but David, where would you like to see greater changes made, specifically in our region?
I think that, we certainly have experience as we celebrate Stonewall 50 this year and recognize, the birth of the modern gay rights movement and sort of take a look back at what we have accomplished over the 50 years. And I think there's a lot to be proud of. We've accomplished quite a bit, everything from marriage equality to ending Don't Ask, Tell, at least for LGB members. And one of the things we need to do moving forward is to make sure that our transgender brothers and sisters could serve openly in the military. Realizing as we look back at what we have accomplished, we need to also look forward and love forward and make sure that we achieve a full equality and justice, for all of our community members. So there's still a lot more work to do. LGBT youth will always need us to organizations like the LGBT Network and Live Out Loud to make sure that we're out in the schools, addressing the bullying that they face, but creating opportunities and leadership opportunities for the young people themselves and also to see, how LGBT folks can be successful and a path forward for them. We need to make sure that all of our businesses and places of employment are safe and inclusive, and really every single community to be a place where LGBT people can be safe. And a lot of that happens through the work that our organizations do, but also through change in policy, whether it's on the local, regional, national level. And so there's a lot more work to do. There's a lot more work to do to achieve full equality and justice. And the way that I kind of look at this our work, and sometimes people say when we pass some monumental pieces of legislation like marriage equality, or this year where in New York State where gender finally passed, extending protection for our transgender brothers and sisters against discrimination, and other pieces of legislation that passed, that okay, our work is done. It's not done. It's almost like construction on the roads, right? You see a big construction project on the road, it gets fixed, and then you move on to the next. Right? There's always a construction project going on.
And so, then you go back after the winter and you fix it again. I just want to hold you there, David, because I'm getting tight on time. I just want to bring Leo in. Leo, what kind of changes would you like to see made?
Yeah. David, first of all, thank you. That was beautifully put. That was really well put. I think we need, from my perspective, we need to be educating the teachers. When we go into schools, we offer professional development for teachers, and they always come to us and they say, we want to help, but we don't know how. So it's our job as a community to educate the teachers on gender and gender expression and gender identity. So they really know how to be in conversation with the students, not only the LGBT students, but the straight students as well. You know, when our programming team goes to a school and they're in conversation and they lead these trainings, the teachers, you know, they'll see them in the halls and they'll thank them. They'll say, thank you so much for coming in and sharing this information. Now I know much more about it and I know how to handle it and I know how to address it with other students.
Mm.
And also what we're doing is doing workshops with all students. You know, everyone needs to be a part of the conversation, not just the LGBT kids, but all students. So if we can just bring in all students and have a conversation and talk about all these different issues and challenges, there the not knowing becomes the knowing. And then the next step is the parents. You know, really just sitting with the parents and really, you know, looking to them at one point, you know, looking to all of them to take the lead, whether it's the teachers, whether it's the students. You know, we just did a training with students to train the teachers, to have conversations with the teachers. And that's more powerful when the students sit down with the teachers and say, this is the impact that homophobia language is having on the school and with me. And, you know, we really need for you to take matters and really start developing language and programs to bring value. So I think it has to come from all of us, and we're about embracing the entire school community. So, you know, so everyone knows and everyone can gain value from these trainings.
Teaching the teachers. Stevie Price, your thoughts, please.
I definitely think that we should be doing more teachings in school, learning about LGBT history. But one thing that I really, what's still going on and what I really love is self-acceptance also, you know, loving yourself. And when you love yourself, you're putting that kind of positivity, not only for you personally, but into the world. And that's how people are going to perceive you. And that's the love and positivity that we want in this world. And that's what I love about Pride, is getting everyone involved, not just people in the LGBTQ community, but getting allies and friends and just being everyone more open and accepting to it. And I think it's happening now. There's definitely more acceptance and it's more mainstream now to be accepting, but there's always more that we can do. There's always more love to spread and more people to love. And that's what Pride is really all about too. And I'm loving that's what's happening. Here we are 50 years after Stonewall, and we're still celebrating, we're still loving, and we're still going. So I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
David, Stevie brought up an interesting point about the history. I don't know if you were able to catch the first segment of our program today. We spoke with Joe Graybars, who in 1990 was the first Connecticut legislator to come out as gay. And at that time, it became national and, believe it or not, international news. And my question to him was, does the younger generation today appreciate what the older generation had to go through?
You know, I think to some degree, yes, and to some degree, they're not. They don't know, and it's important to meaning they don't know about our history and the struggles and the fight and what we had to do to win. You know, equality, or to be able to be out and win an election. And, you know, and I think it's important that we, you know, history is something that you always learn from, and hopefully, you know, bad history you don't repeat. And so, you know, we need to be helping our young people know about our history. And so it's a responsibility of organizations. It's a responsibility of everyone, but in particular, LGBT centers like the LGBT Network to make sure that our history is displayed, that we have programs around LGBT history, that we teach LGBT history in our schools, not only to LGBT kids, but to everyone. And in fact, the LGBT Network has a new statewide initiative that we launched at our grand opening called Teach LGBTNY, where we're developing curricula and also advocating for the legislation to pass in New York to mandate LGBT history be taught in New York schools. So we have to do our job to educate the young folks on history. And that's important for them to realize so that they, you know, they realize that achieving social justice is not a cakewalk, you know.
David, I'm sorry. Just about out of time. No, it's great. I enjoyed the conversation, but I have to hold you there because I'm pretty much out of time for this segment. David Kilmnick is the president and the CEO of the LGBT Network on Long Island. Leo Preziosi Jr., founder and executive director of Live Out Loud, and Stevie Price, the host of the Saturday and maybe the Sunday portion of this year's Pride on the Beach Festival. Guys,
no
thank
pressure.
You. I appreciate your time today. It was quite nice of you
thank
to take
you,
the time
Ron.
To talk with us.
Thank you.
Okay, fantastic.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Be well. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you could email us, tfs@wshu.org, or follow us on Twitter. We're at FullStoryWSHU. One more short break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. It's the Full Story on WSHU. We continue our conversation about Pride Month. And we're going to close our show today with three more guests. Sean Michael Hazuda is Executive Director of the Triangle Community Center. Robin McCallan is Executive Director of True Colors. And Raven Mathern, who's a member of the Board of Representatives for the City of Stamford and is transgender. Sean Michael, nice to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to bring a Yalie into the studio.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back here in Connecticut. I've been here for about 2 months now, and we've hit the ground running, but it feels like putting on an old glove.
Robin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And, Sean Michael, I'd like to start with you. What does Pride Month mean to you?
Personally, it means a lot as a gay man. It's just a wonderful celebration because when I was growing up in Texas, I can absolutely assure you that there were no Pride Month events. And we don't have gay people in Texas. So, yeah, I put that in quotes, by the way, for those who can't see me. So it's just wonderfully liberating. But most importantly, it's empowering and it's very uplifting. I was blessed to be at the Bridgeport Pride flag raising event yesterday, and I got to talk about how important it is when we raise that flag. It's for equality, it's for justice, but it's also for life. Mm. We're celebrating the lives of our LGBT community members, but also all those who went before us. I can assure you that 50 years ago when the Stonewall riots occurred, it would have never been on the forefront of their minds that here we would be raising the flag, the LGBTQ flag, the pride flag, right, on a government building. And here we are in 2019. It's amazing.
I was mentioning at the very beginning of the program, I grew up in that area. And so when you talk about how times have changed,
yes,
and the different perspectives and the history of it, and that's why I was talking with David before this and Joe at the beginning of the program, and I'm saying, boy, when you think back to what it was like 50 years ago, it was a different world.
A very different world.
And Robin, I've got to ask you, what does Pride Month mean to you?
I think I would echo a lot of what has really already been said. You know, I work mostly with young people, and so I think on the one hand, pride gives people an opportunity to be out in an environment where, you know, for once in their lives they're members of a majority rather than a minority culture. But I also know that there's, you know, we have almost 40 kids in our mentoring program who have been thrown away by their families of origin because of their identity. So, you know, things have changed a lot. For some of us, there's still a fair amount of rejection and isolation. So I think pride is an opportunity for a larger community to come together, but we have to stay cognizant of the fact that there are members of our community who are not able to be there, and that we should keep them, you know, sort of in our thoughts and in our actions as we celebrate there. You know, it's kind of a privilege to be out, if you think about it.
Mm. Robin, you know, you and I have spoken before, and you had mentioned mm-hmm. in the past about parents who throw their kids out. And at that time, I was disturbed by it. I'm equally disturbed today by that because I have trouble wrapping my brain around the fact that a parent would disown a child. It's just me. I'm stunned by it.
Well, we work here at Triangle Community Center. We work closely with the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness. And in this age range, approximately 18 to 24 or so, upwards of 33% of the homeless are LGBTQ, and they become suddenly homeless because, as Robin was pointing out, the parents don't want them there. It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
And I think the other thing that happens is that kids who grow up in the system, you know, when they age out at 18 or 19, in a lot of ways, they're not ready to be solely on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember being an 18-year-old. I was away at college, but I certainly called home a lot and went home a lot when I needed stuff and had a place to go for the summer, you know, in between school. And that, you know, we've got kids that you know, sort of grew up in the system, and then, you know, after they age out of care, I think nationally 11% are homeless within the first year. And my experience, especially kids who are LGBT and especially trans kids, the rates are much higher. And that's why I think you're seeing that 18 to 24-year-olds, that there's not a safety net for them in the way that we might be able to use the system to support a kid who's under 18.
Raven Mathern is joining us. Raven has been with us before. A member of the Board of Rep for the City of Stamford is transgender. Raven, how's it going in Stamford? How are you?
I'm doing good. Things are doing well in Stamford. And thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure as always. Now, you were elected back in 2017. You made a lot of news back then. And I have to ask you, nowadays, does anyone care? Or do they just want you to lower the taxes, make sure the schools are okay, and give them a safe city?
I would say that it would appear that nobody cares until they have reason to have something against me, and then all of a sudden it comes to the forefront of the conversation, whether it has anything to do with the topic or not. It becomes something that people can use as a way to leverage an agenda or an opinion against me unfairly, and it can make things difficult to try and get things done in my city. I think trying to call it whether or not anybody cares kind of puts a different light on it than what I actually encounter in the real world.
Mm. You know, Raven, I don't know if you were able to catch the first part of our show today. Joe Graybars was with us, and he was the first Connecticut legislator to come out as gay back in 1990. And my question is, because I believe that you are the first transgender lawmaker in Connecticut, do you ever think about being a trailblazer?
I think about being a trailblazer in the sense that people keep telling me that I am. It was one of those things, like, when I got elected,
Thanks, Ron, huh? I just had to remind you of that, because just in case you didn't know that you were, just in case.
So I keep being told.
Shawn Michael, tell us a little bit about the Triangle Community Center.
Well, we've been around for 29 years. A lot of people don't know that. And we're getting ready for our 30th anniversary in 2020.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's amazing. And we serve all of Fairfield County. We obviously have a larger presence in Norwalk and Bridgefield and Stamford area, but we're continuing to expand our services. But as we were talking about earlier, we have a great partnership with the Connecticut Coalition and Homelessness. So members of the LGBTQ community who find themselves suddenly homeless and need assistance, we have a program for that is it's having run a homeless shelter. It means something to me very personally. That's one of the things that attracted me to this job, and we have an amazing staff that helps with that. Our newest program that we've started, because we have a myriad of programs, I won't sit there and go through them all here right now, but people can certainly check us out at our great website, ctpridecenter.org. But the newest program is a counseling program, and it's really amazing because we have parents bringing their 10-year-olds. We have 70-year-old seniors coming to us. We have the whole range, and it's very important because mental health challenges are prevalent throughout the whole country. It's something that's been kept secret for so long, and I'm so grateful for those pioneers who have stepped forth, particularly high-profile athletes and actors, to say, hey, I'm dealing with this too. It's okay for you too as well, because mm-hmm. it really has opened the door, which once was, you know, sort of in the closet, if you will. And it's just an amazing program that we have started. Our great board president, Erica Hartwell, who is a professor at Fairfield University, she started this with us, and it is just booming. And what's great about it is, if, especially if you are LGBTQ, you feel safe at Triangle Community Center. We're known for having a loving staff. We have great volunteers, and our new counselors are just terrific. And parents, the fact that they're bringing their children to us it speaks volumes, because when you're a teenager or any age, but let's focus on the youth for a moment here. You're going through so much just being at school, right? So many changes are going on to your body, with your heart, with your mind, and you have peer pressure and all these things going on. And then you add the LGBTQ umbrella, if you will, on top of that. It's a lot to deal mm-hmm. with, and so many people keep it inside, and those struggles are very painful. I know I went through that myself, and as a teen. So if we're able to help a young person get through that, imagine how that's shaping them in these formative years, so they hopefully can have a very healthy life as an adult, and
good productive life.
Yes, exactly. Because mm-hmm. we, like I said, we'll have a 70-year-old come to us. They had no access to these type of opportunities when they were young.
Still struggling,
and now we're grateful.
Age.
That's right, to be there for them today, to help them whatever it is they're facing with. But we have a wonderful program. So we have PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It's a great service. So I tell people, you don't have to be LGBTQ to come to Triangle Community Center. You could also be a business owner, work in the government, be a school teacher. It doesn't matter. We have a great program called the Training Institute, and we go to corporations, to schools, to government offices, and we help educate people there about LGBTQ needs, so that way you can mm-hmm. maybe serve a fellow employee or a fellow student, whatever it could be. And it's just been really enlightening. In fact, I'm going to have to give a shout out to Tracy Locke. We did a training at their Wilton office, and it went so well that they sent our staff to their offices in Dallas and Chicago to train nice. All of their leadership. It was amazing.
Robin, as the executive director of True Colors, what is it that the state of Connecticut is not doing right now that you believe it should be doing?
Wow. Let me think about where I'm going to start with that. I think that one of the places where we still need a lot of work is finding safe and affirming homes for LGBTQ youth. And I think here's a place that I think we really need a lot of work. Families matter. Parents, the most important indicator of outcome for LGBTQ youth is the response of their families. And so we need to figure out, when a kid comes out, their whole family's coming out. And so we need to figure out how to support racially and ethnically diverse families when their kids are coming out, because a lot of the systems that already exist are systems that are set up on a model that some communities find very disconcerting. Like, I grew up Italian, and in my Italian family, you did not talk about your business outside of your family. You know, you left your business on the doorknob on the way out. So if I had told my parents coming out, listen, you know, go talk to these other parents about your lesbian daughter, you know, they would have thought I was nuts, because they would not have done that. And so I think that, you know, there's some international services for people who are Spanish-speaking and of different cultures. There's some national services for people who are on the Asian and Pacific Island diaspora. There's not very much for people among the African diaspora in terms of creating ways and systems for people to reach out to other people to get support when their kid comes out. I did a training in New Jersey a couple of weeks ago for a corporation, and the one of the moms was the mom of a transgender child, and that she was seeking other moms to talk to about it, and the only access that she had were the children of her child's, I mean, the parents of her child's friends, and they happened to all be white, and she wasn't. And so she felt like, okay, they get it, but they don't really get it, you know, because it's different. And so I think that's an area that all of us should be trying to figure out, how do we create more culturally competent services for families for whom English is not their first language, for recent immigrants, for people who are undocumented. Those are folks that I think that are significantly underserved by the state.
I'm gonna just jump in here for one second because I feel that Raven has been neglected, and I just don't want to run out of time. Raven, the same type of question, please, just with an emphasis on Stamford and the Fairfield County region. What should be done?
So I'm thankful to have Shawn Michael on with me at the same time for this. And unfortunately, when I came out in Stamford, I found that there really weren't a lot of resources. And I only recently came out shortly before I ran for office. And I found that in order to try and get access to anything to kind of help me understand more about what I was trying to go through, in order to help me get access to medical resources to help me make my way through this process,
someone didn't like what he was saying. I'm only teasing. we'll get Raven back. Don't worry. We'll pay the phone bill. Shawn Michael, since he was referencing what he was doing with Triangle Community Center, maybe you could pick it up from there.
Well, sure. So, and by the way, Raven was one of our star volunteers on Saturday at Pride in the Park. So we're happy that Raven had such great experience at Triangle Community Center and come and participate too continually with us. But we definitely help transgender individuals navigate their way to the services that they need to help benefit them in a myriad of ways. And we do that same thing, like I said, with someone who's suddenly homeless. Whatever your issue is, we can be there. And people don't realize all of the paperwork and all the things that one has to do. Because you have to then go to the courthouse and file papers, you know, et cetera. It's a very lengthy process. Caitlin Owens, one of our program coordinators, she's amazing. And that's one of the things that Caitlin does every single week. So we cover everything that one needs. But, of course, we also put you in contact with those medical professionals who can help you to complete that transition,
okay,
like Raven did.
I'm sorry, do we have Raven back? No, we don't. And you know what? We will pick up the conversation with Raven probably sometime in the near future because I only have 1 minute left. Robin, I'm going to ask you just for 30 seconds for final thoughts. Then we'll get the final thoughts from Shawn Michael, please. Go ahead.
Final thoughts. I'm happy that it's June. I'm happy that it's Pride. I'm honored and amazed that it's been a 50-year anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And I would tell people, listen, if you've got room in your heart, in your home, there's an adolescent in Connecticut that's looking for a family to love them. You know, call us. We'll get you hooked up.
That's a beautiful thought. Thank you for that. Shawn Michael, final words from you, please.
Yes, we're so blessed to be celebrating Pride Month together with you and the entire Fairfield County community. And we just want all members of the LGBTQ community to know they have a loving and safe home here at Triangle Community Center. And if you are a non-member of that community, you are still welcome. We have great programs for you.
Shawn Michael Hazuda, Executive Director of Triangle Community Center. Robin McCallan, Executive Director of True Colors. And Raven Mathern, an abbreviated conversation, but Raven will return in the future. A transgender member of the Board of Rep for the City of Stamford. Thank you all. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garreau, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Rupiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.